Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and you know if you join us on a regular basis, the slogan for this show, if there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American-owned renewable energy companies to address the effects of higher energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for renewable energy projects to bring down the under and unemployment of young African-American men and women locally and nationally and throughout the diaspora. Also to educate the African and African-American community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education through programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. This show is also brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, and that initiative is coming to you live form of Blog Talk Radio. We are can be heard on iTunes. We are streaming X, Twitter, and Link. Also, the show is brought to you every week, ladies and gentlemen, by the National Association of Blacks in Solar, which is a public policy organization with the mission of advocating for more growth and market share for African-American renewable energy companies in the green energy economy. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a very, very important show for you today, but I want to set the stage before I bring on one of my guests. I have one of my guests already in the green room, and we're going to bring him on into the living room and sit him down on the couch shortly, and we're going to have this discussion about this Justice 40 initiative that came from Executive Order 14008, which was the first executive order that President Biden signed almost 3 years ago. And that gave rise to an initiative called Justice 40, and we're looking at the question, which has been one that I have raised over a number of years. Where is the Green Economic Development Plan in the implementation of the Biden Build Back Better and Inflation Reduction Act? We're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, two historic bills that have been passed into legislation by the Biden administration to combat climate change. And inside that bill of $780 billion, I did not say anything about million, I said billion with a B, there were $370 billion for various programs over the next 8 years. And we're looking at how these monies have been distributed to the states through the White House fact sheet put back out several months back, which I came on this platform. I sent this information out to a number of individuals around the country so they would have access to this information that shows how much money has already been sent to each state, the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico. It also laid out the amount of money for electric buses, the amount of money for infrastructure as we began to drill down with the replacing of school buses, for EV charging infrastructure, for workforce development, and there are a number of various categories. But I want to sort of set the stage before I bring my guest on to share exactly why I asked them to be on today. Now, the Biden administration is looking at, and there have been, there are constant press releases being put out on a daily basis by all federal agencies as it relates to this funding. Now, White House points out to a nationwide clean energy jobs growth as the IRA success story. But we're going to find out today, ladies and gentlemen, when we speak with Mr. Will Shirley of Jackson, Mississippi, who is the owner and operator of Sundial Solar USA, who is more than qualified, who has been in the business, who has boots on the ground, that has developed a program called Solarize the Delta. And he's going to tell his story of how the state of Mississippi didn't have a plan, but yet when he, after he did all the hard work of going out and getting counties to come on under collaboration, how this did not even want to address some of the very key components of this, the scoring situation through the point system, which the Secretary of the Department of Commerce, Mrs. Gina Romero, was just in front of the Senate House Committee being dragged over the coals because most of these projects are going to what we know as the Deep South, known as Red States. The investment right now, Qcell, which is a North Korean corporation, is investing $2.3 billion with a B in Dalton, Georgia, to build the largest solar manufacturing facility in America. We're going to drill down on that. We're going to look at the demographics of that county. We're going to look at the employment opportunities being made and opportunities in the outreach to the African-American community in the Atlanta, Georgia area and in the Georgia area as we begin to look at who's going to be hired for these jobs. But first, let's look at what the White House has recently put out. Now, this particular article was done by Utility Dive. Biden administration has issued three recent reports showing growth in the clean energy jobs as well as record investment in the sector. Now, in 22, both energy jobs and clean energy group and Washington, D.C., according to the Department of Energy annual U.S. Energy and Employment Jobs Report. In a Monday blog, the White House cited this as two other new reports, indicators called Bidenomics success. Clean energy jobs grew at 3.9% last year. DOE found that the quarterly census and employment and wage found in employment and power generation and supply has recovered after a several years of downturn, reaching its highest levels in a decade in the first quarter of 2023. Nationwide in 2022, the clean energy jobs grew by 114,000, 3.9% to 3.1 million jobs, the White House said. Now, this particular article was written by Dana DeGango, which, if I'm changing the name of their parent, I apologize, but we are struggling with that today. But we also are going to look at an article that applications open now for low-income communities for the bonus credit program, which is another initiative under that. We're also going to discuss the Solar for All initiative, which started here in Washington, D.C., by a gentleman by the name of Mr. Ted Trabue, who serves currently on the Washington, D.C. Public Service Commission, but he is former director of DCSEU, DC Sustainable Utility, and he started this pilot program with one of the founding members of the National Association of Blacks in Solar, Mr. Mark Davis, which I am currently the acting president of this organization. So I'm wearing a number of hats this morning, ladies and gentlemen, but we won't want to reach into our vault and come up with this information to address these issues. Now, as we have indicated, this growth has been put out, and there isn't a whole lot that I can say good as it relates to where we are as the African-American community in this process of growth, because nobody is monitoring what's going on in the states with Justice 40. Let's first look at what Justice 40 means. The Justice 40 initiative says that 40% of all of the benefit from all of these billions of dollars must go to those communities that data shows are most deserving. I don't know any other folks other than the African-American community, unless it's the Native American community, and they have specific carve-outs in some of this federal funding that's not being made available because they have a different status as it relates to how the U.S. government deals with the African-American community nationally and the Native American community nationally on a national basis. Now, in addition, DOE reported that and announced investments in specific generation projects such as subsets of larger booms across America, clean energy supply chain. The White House said the investment has spurred strong job growth between January of 2022 and March of 2023. The economy added 21,000 jobs in the power generation and supply, reaching its highest level in more than a decade following a prolonged decline in employment in the industry. If you remember something called COVID-19, the plandemic, known as the pandemic, and someone who I refer to as COVID-45, we know him as Donald Can't Get Nothing Right Trump. Ladies and gentlemen, this is serious. Overall, energy employment in the U.S. grew, as we indicated, at 3.8% last year, outpacing economies for the wide employment growth of 3.9, according to DOE. Some states saw particularly large gains in West Virginia, Oklahoma, New Mexico, leading clean energy job growth, with the White House said that including traditional transmission distribution, clean energy jobs in West Virginia West Virginia increased 19.3%, the most in the country in 2022, while clean energy jobs increased 9.1% in New Mexico and Oklahoma. The White House said clean energy jobs in this case are defined with the work related to the U.S. net zero goals, including grid technology, storage, nuclear energy, electrical transmission and distribution, and jobs qualify for more than 50% of the workers at this time is devoted in clean energy. Ladies and gentlemen, I think I've set the table enough. It's time for us to talk to folks who have what we call stake in the game. With great pleasure, I have the opportunity to bring back to our listening audience Mr. Efren Jernigan, who's director of the Southwest Union Cooperative in Houston, Texas. This gentleman has done something very phenomenal. His organization, they are building the largest African-American-owned solar farm project, which I think will be about 70 megawatts on a large brownfield piece of land in their community, changing the economics. But you're going to find out that when it comes to our professionals, such as Mr. Jernigan, organizations being able to go direct and get this funding through the state coffers, that that's where the problem is. We also have on board Mr. Will Shirley of Sundial Solar USA, who has done a mammoth job in the state of Mississippi with what he has, his undertaking of the Solarize to Delta project. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, I hope you, I'm quite sure you gentlemen heard what I have to say. So let me first start off with Mr. Shirley, Mr. Jernigan, because I know he's going to be going to a funeral, and I want him to have an opportunity to sort of get things off of his chest. Will, would you please give our listening audience a little of the history, your company, and the Solarize the Delta project, and where things are going? Because I know there was a recent deadline that a proposal had to be submitted to the federal government for the Solar for All program, which was a pilot started here that has now $7.5 billion, and we have 43 states and the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico are competing for that money, and there were specific points and things that had to be a part of that proposal, and you can shed some light on that issue. Go right ahead, Will.
Thank you, Mr. Bate, and thank you for having time to approach your listening audience and try to tell them or inform them of what's actually happening on the ground relative to the Justice 40 initiative in renewable energy. Our company has been in existence for 14 years now in the state of Mississippi. And our whole purpose was to service our own communities with this new technology called solar power. So we started back in 2009. As soon as we got started, we immediately was a part of the establishment of the Renewable Energy Industries Association in the area. And so we became founding members of the Gulf States Renewable Energy Industries Association. We're the only black company involved in that process. And at this point, we're still the only black-owned company that's there. So we've been able to rub shoulders with decision makers in the state of Mississippi relative to renewable energy, and we've created a base of support around a larger project that we call the Solarize the Delta project. Our company started working on that project about a year and a half ago in anticipation of the current current Solar for All grant that was out. The deadline has passed, but we pulled in that process of preparing for the Solar for All grant, we pulled together numerous agencies, state agencies, state organizations, nonprofit organizations such as the NAACP and organizations of that caliber to support the Solarize the Delta process. Now, I just want to let your audience know that between 2009 and present day today, black companies, especially Sundial Solar, have meet our goals and objectives. Our goals and objectives as to project development and project construction and O&M services for those projects. There's numerous reasons in the state of Mississippi for that, and one of them, of course, is policy, not solar policy, not being vigorous enough for any company to achieve those goals. But special problems has occurred for black companies all over this country in terms of first of all being prepared to go ahead and submit adequate grants relative to the Justice 40 initiative. That problem, I think, we have. Black Americans have put together a process where they are now competing, but even in that competition, we're left not being successful based on certain circumstances and based on certain entrants coming in for competitive purposes. Is this? When we have when black organizations get together over several states, write an in-depth grant to help black communities train for solar jobs, our black communities are out there and ready and willing to accept this training. However, the 19.2, I think, million-dollar grant was not accepted, not approved. When things like that happen, when you have all this activity in preparation of grants, and then you submit a particularly well-put-together grant that services our communities by our people, that's when Justice 40 loses its grip on things.
I want to step in at this point and let our listening audience know that Mr. Will Shirley is the Vice President of the National Association of Blacks in Solar, and we have worked very, very closely over the last several years. Numerous phone calls and hours on the phone researching, providing data and information, and we were able, with Mr. Shirley's leadership, to get Peabody College to serve as our lead fiduciary, and we did apply for a $19 million grant from the Department of Commerce under the Good Jobs Challenge initiative that was, in fact, out last year. And we went after this to grant with Mississippi, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, D.C., and Maryland having firms, African-American firms, and all of those solar installation design firms in those market demographics, which was to train almost 1,000 young African and African-American and young people of color, whomever, who would be interested in coming into this renewable energy sector, from electricians for EV charging infrastructure to solar installers to energy auditors. This Hoopaloo would have been the first in the country offering about an 18-hour curriculum that they were going to have developed and designed, but we were unsuccessful in getting the grant. Now, there was $500 million in this particular pool of funding. Out of the $500 million, we had 8 HBCUs with 11 different applications for workforce development training cohorts. Only two were in the area of energy. North Carolina A&T applied. They were partnering with Duke Energy and Siemens Energy, two of the largest corporate giants in the energy industry in the world. Now, out of that $500 million, one HBCU was the only African-American nonprofit or HBCU receiving any funding out of this $500 million. Ladies and gentlemen, that is a long way. If we're talking about 40% of the benefit from these programs. Now, as we move fast forward, we learned that it was not a level playing field. We learned that we could not lobby on behalf of that grant proposal, but we could advocate. But when it comes time to get the president of Tuvalu to step to the forefront to advocate while she was here in Washington, D.C., I personally set up an interview with News Channel 5 here with Martin Wisdom, who is a Jackson State University alumnus, who is a news anchor here in Washington, D.C., to talk about the importance of this grant and what it would have meant to the state of Mississippi, to Mr. Shirley's firm, to Tupelo College, and the impetus of the importance of this opportunity. That didn't get done, ladies and gentlemen. If I'm standing very passionate behind this mic this morning, I am, because I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. As the famous words of Fannie Lou Hamer said years ago, fighting this fight with people not of in our community not understanding that everything on this planet revolves around energy. The media spin in the Middle East around Israel and the Gaza Strip, that's smoke and mirrors. It's all about the oil and the strategic location of Israel and the U.S. having a support station and base to monitor what's coming through the Gaza, the Black Sea, as those ships take that oil around the world. So let's get real about this. Everything starts with energy. Everything ends with energy. Mr. Sherlin, you went and you went to Greenwood, which I know is one of the larger municipalities in the state of Mississippi, and they originally agreed to support this project and did not at the last moment, backed out of it. And then you had to go and find some other African-American municipal townships, and one of them did step to the forefront. But when it came to the state, who did not have a plan, we're finding out for workforce development and a number of other components. And as I, in my last conversation with you, they didn't even share the draft of the grant proposal before it was submitted, so you don't even know what's in the grant proposal that was submitted. Am I correct?
Yes, sir, you are correct. And that is
part of the problem. It was not the city of Greenwood. It was the city of Greenville. I don't know what happened in that circumstance where the city did not realize the value of this grant to economic value of this grant to that city and the whole Delta of Mississippi. It would have been that grant proposal would have covered all bases, training for our young people or young adults in solar and all parts of renewable energy, building a manufacturing plant for solar batteries with a brilliant young black engineer, delivering solar to homes, low to moderate homes in a wide scope, in the wide scope of the Mississippi Delta. It had a network of services involved in that grant that probably is not going to be available under any other grant, such as the application that the state will submit. But you know that, and that's the disheartening thing about it. We don't know what the state or what any other Hope Enterprises, for example, we don't know what their main goal is. Is the main goal to win the grant and do slighted work in terms of market transformation, or is it the goal to actually do what needs to be done to transform the market? I think that we may be looking at a program coming into Mississippi that does not address the wide scope of problems that the black community has.
Well, on that note, let me bring Mr. Jernigan on into this conversation, because Mr. Jernigan has one, to my listening audience, one hell of a story. Mr. Jernigan, welcome to Railways, Back to Railways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And would you go and share some information about South Union and the tremendous work you've been doing there in Houston? Okay.
All right. First of all, thank you, Russ, okay, and Solar Now and in the Future for this opportunity to speak to our people about how African Americans in great positions to succeed are having problems. Well, first of all, let me apologize.
Mr. Jernigan, are you on speaker? You're sounding a little garbled. I want my listening audience to make sure they can hear what you're saying.
I just had ear, nose, and throat surgery in my voice.
Okay, well, now, enough said. Go right ahead, brother. I apologize. Go right ahead. Go ahead and speak.
Okay, so I'm going to try to slow down so that my voice comes across. So I'm the president of South Union Community Development. I had an opportunity to write a proposal to convert a 240-acre landfill into a 50-megawatt solar farm. And so that is what we are doing, but we have not been able to acquire the funding support to do the workforce training to make sure our community totally participates. Now, right now, we are a part of a state proposal to get some of this solar for all money, but we have no idea if we will be successful. Another reason is I have written federal grants, but I know it is so competitive, we never get them. And even with the Justice Party trying to make a way, I've been on so many webinars, but I'm still uncomfortable when writing a proposal, because I know they need all of these changes, but where they fail is they still have the same people on the judging committee. So in other words, it's the judging committee that's going to judge all of the voices white. They're going to choose the same white organization they always knew. And so that's why we can't get justice until we change those voting boards. So I'm going to digress right there. I hope I was heard. I'm standing by.
Well, Mr. Jernigan, you were definitely heard. You were heard here in the Washington DMV. You were heard around the World Wide Web because our show is, we've had close to about 50,000 folks to come and to our website and tap into this podcast, Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. Now, what's so very disturbing, ladies and gentlemen, is that back in February of this year, 2023, I was at the Department of Energy with a cadre of other black professionals in this renewable energy industry. And it was supposed to be a summit which made an announcement that $6.3 million would be going to an organization called Black Owners of Solar Services, BOSS. This announcement was made. This was to help jumpstart more African-American firms in the solar arena. Now, looking at the data that's put out by the Solar Foundation, not my numbers, but the Solar Foundation, we have less than 35 African-American firms nationwide, out over 11,000 firms. The sad part about this is the smoke and mirrors, Mrs. Janelle Minifert, who is Mrs. Yolanda Baker's right hand at the Department of Energy, they will be hosting all next week forums online talking about the Justice for the Initiative and all of the success they're having. But what is the benefit to the African-American community when you have to be in North Carolina to be able to apply for that program? I was on a webinar last week with the OE, which says, you can ask them any question, anything. And I asked, why is it that one of our firms had gone to the website, attempted to apply for assistance, but they're outside of the state of North Carolina and couldn't get no help? I have had several African-American-based firms, which we've had conversations about this issue. They traveled from Maryland all the way to North Carolina, and they, before these people were invited down, they knew they were starting a pilot program that was going to only be made available to North Carolina. I don't have a problem with this being happening in North Carolina. What we're basically saying, we're saying, look, we need carved out for our firms. We need technical assistance centers that will assist in writing these grants for our firms. Going back to the grant proposal that was submitted as Tougaloo University's lead fiduciary, my company, the Positive Change Purchasing Corporation, and our members, we had to raise $6,000. To pay the grant writer. This work is not free. African-American firms don't have that kind of money where they can invest in something that might happen. When they put their dollars out, they got to know that they're going to get a return on investment. The federal government has not been truthful, has not been forthcoming. Now, here at the National Association of Blacks and Solar, that is what we'll do. We'll because we're not going to broadcast everything we're getting ready to do. We're going to get it done, and then we'll make the announcement. But we are looking at how we can set up a technical assistance center working with African-American grant writers to help our companies go after these, apply for these grants, because there's funding that will pay these grant writers to assist. Right now, through the Department of Agriculture, private consultant firms have been hired, I've done some research, some of African-American, to assist black farmers who have been discriminated against through the findings of a lawsuit that was brought by the Black Farmers Organization.
Yes.
$2.5 billion. $2.5 billion is in this fund. But the application is 40 pages thick. Our farmers don't have the abilities to complete those applications, so they have to hire someone to do this. And that is what I'm speaking to our HBCU presidents today, saying that our schools of businesses, our MBAs, they have to get involved in this process with just not just giving theory for someone to get a degree and walk across the stage and have to come out here and beg somebody else who don't look like us for a job. If we cannot get these kind of projects funded for the South Unions and the Sundial Souls in this world, who do you think's going to hire our young people? The employment numbers in the stolen industry are, when you begin to look and drill down inside of this growth, are a national disgrace as it relates to how many African-American youth and young people are being hired because they don't have the training. I was on a webinar yesterday with the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation, put on employment, discrimination, all these issues, and we have all these professionals talking about these issues. We have to get past the talk. We need to have a congressional hearing with our African-American members of our Congressional Black Caucus about these issues so that the Will Shirley's, the African journeys of this world, horses can be lifted to the point where we can get called out for their organizations. Now, gentlemen, I am on fire this morning, because I guess you can hear that. But I'm fairly, fairly frustrated with the misinformation that's coming out of black folks' mouths working over here in the Department of Diversity and Equity Office at the Department of Energy here in Washington, D.C., when they projected that this program that they were starting in North Carolina was going to be a national program. It's a pilot program only for North Carolina. I'd like to either one of you to weigh in on the comments that I just made. Will, come right on in.
Yes, sir. That I don't understand how a state program can be advertised as a national success before implementation. That it seems to me that the organizers of this announcement wanted to impress upon people that, you know, this black organization is out there to help black solar renewable energy companies nationwide. And that
let me clear the air on that. We're not talking about organization. We're talking about the U.S. Department of Energy Office of Equity and Diversity headed by Mr. Shalonda Baker. Okay? And this is what I'm saying is, not only did I bring her executive director, assistant director on this platform, but I had her on Carl Nelson's show, which went national. And she repeated the same thing. It's though this was a national program that any of our firms in all 50 states could get some assistance. They can't. So the bottom line is, for those who will be getting this recording of this show will be sent to Capitol Hill to all members of the Congressional Black Caucus, asking them to urgently consider, after they can get a speaker in place and they can give away billions to Israel and the Ukraine, what about the black folks who put Biden in office and they're coming right back at our community asking us, telling us how valuable and how powerful our vote. But when it comes to getting the money to the stakeholders such as South Union and Sundown Solar, WDC Solar, and the African-American-based organizations and firms in this country, there seems to be a problem. Now, I understand that a little bit of success can go to folks' heads and they can forget from which they came. And this has been one of the problems that with our African-American-based firm, everybody think they got their own contacts. And what I am saying to them, if we don't come together and get some attorneys, which I have spoken with some attorneys that would be interested in representing the group, but they want to know who the group is. And when people turn around and say to me, what am I doing after I got this organization legally incorporated, we have our letter of determination from IRS, and I'm talking about the National Association of Blacks and Solar. And I can come on this platform every week, and we're not the greedy, but we're certainly the needy. When we say go to positivechangepc.com and provide some funding for this particular show because it needs to be syndicated nationally, and we are still working to, in fact, get this show so it can be heard through our NPR stations under the XM channel 142, which is Sirius XM, which has 11 HBCU radio stations. The only problem is when little boys say they broke, they're public sponsors. So that means they got to have constant drives to keep their broadcasts on the air. And everybody will say one thing, but we only have one commercial African-American radio station in the United States of America on an HBCU campus, and that's WHUR, and that was because the former owner of the Washington Post, Mrs. Graham, was under tremendous pressure here in Washington, D.C., through another today mobile giant, Ms. Kathy Hughes, which was talking about that license that they had and that it should go to Howard University, and told the African-American community to take those Washington Post newspapers and take them back and throw them right in front of the Washington Post. And they couldn't keep up. They couldn't clean the newspapers up fast enough. When the papers started filling up and Howard University got commercial radio station license here for WHUR. That's the only reason why they got it. They didn't get it because somebody just was in love with Howard. It was because of community pressure. And I am saying that unless your story, Mr. Jernigan, is told, your story, Mr. Shirley, is told to our communities on a consistent basis about the need to get these technical assistance centers funded by the states, because to see the red states, the southern states already have the funding to fund these operations so you can get assistance with writing that grant. I understand with the numerous telephone conversations, Will, that me and you had about data and information and the timelines and the pressures that you've been under trying to run your or company on a day-to-day basis, advocate, run here, run there. That is insane. They have money in the state of Mississippi caucus to assist Sundial with this. They have money in Texas to assist Mr. Jernigan. But you heard both of them say this morning, when the final draft of the proposal was sent out, they don't know what's in it. And this is just the story. This is Bidenomics. And this is how, what it's supposed to be doing, working for black folks. Well, I want it to work for black folks. That's why I'm working with my state delegate, Mrs. Dana Krabs Tarvis, here in the state of Maryland in the, from the 5th District to get Justice 40. She's writing the legislation. She will introduce the legislation in January, and we're pushing right now to get companies and support to go to Annapolis to testify, to codify that so it will be made legally binding so Wes Moore, will, even though he's African-American, will have to make sure some of our companies here in the state of Maryland get support. The issue is, who are those companies? I've asked my state delegate, how many African-American or Latino-based firms do we have licensed to do business in the solar arena here in Washington, in Prince George's County, right outside of Washington, D.C.? And she can't tell me. So I told her, well, if you want this to happen, we can't just be talking about retrofits and biofuels. We got to be talking about renewable energy. Gentlemen, to give you an example, on yesterday, there was a gentleman on Carl Nelson's show talking about the Red Line in Baltimore, which is a subway line which was supposed to be built to connect East Baltimore with West Baltimore, which stops going completely throughout the city. Former Governor Hogan had received, y'all ready for this? $5.3 billion from the federal government to build this line. He sent $3 billion back to the federal government and took $2.3 billion of it and put it in highway and roads and put it out and dispersed it in rural areas where his Republican base and constituents are, and did, and basically killed the red line. And that's what they're doing right now. They've formed a collaboration group that are working to get Wes Moore to make sure he brings that, goes back and gets this money and puts this red line into place, because we have to move away from fossil fuels and we got to go to mass transportation rather than bus services for black communities. You can't stabilize a major city and with buses. You need a subway system. And mass transit would do this. And they talked about the pros and the cons and the benefits of the economic development that will come around those subway stops, which is going on right now here in Prince George's County. But they're also talking about powering that system with solar or wind. So what I'm saying, there are initiatives, there are projects. Our communities, we aren't stupid. We know that this funding is available. We know that these opportunities are out here. But when you have legitimate organizations such as South Union, Mr. Turner, would you weigh in, please, on some of the stumbling blocks your organization ran into when it began to try to negotiate with the state to get the funding directly to implement the workforce development training component of your project? Mr. Jernigan?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Bethay, before Mr. Yes. Jernigan, and by the way, hello, Mr. Jernigan, how you doing?
I'm fine. How are you, Earl?
Okay, pretty good. Look, I've got to go ahead and attend this event, and so yeah, I have to sign out now, but I want your listening audience to know that the National Association of Blacks in Solar is the only organization that looks at the full picture of renewable energy as associated with our communities, black communities across this country, and the policies and rules and regulations and the inequities that exist. So I just want everybody to know that
if you want any information on anything relative to solar, just go to Mr. Bethea's website, positivechangepc.com, positivechangepc.com. Go to news and events, and every black organization, every black individual in this country will be better for it after they start the process of reading and following Mr. Bethea's website. So I've got to check out now, but I do want to say just one other thing, and that is we have to support each other. We have to support the National Association of Blacks in Solar because it is the repository of all the data that we need to take action. So, ladies and gentlemen, Amen. And Mr. Bethea, thank you for inviting me to the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Will, for joining us this morning. Mr. Jernigan, it looks like we're going to do this solo for the next about 10 minutes, but you have such a
awesome.
Tremendous story, and I've been working with you and having you on, and I followed you. And see what is very disturbing to me, Mr. Jernigan, President Biden himself came and did a press release here in Washington, D.C., in the Rose Garden, and talked about your project. He talked about this project that you, that your brain trust, your project. But in the White House, we'll get this because I'm going to send this directly to, email this show directly to them. What are, how, and what would be your suggestions and recommendations for the South unions to be able to get support, Mr. Jernigan? Do you think it's going to take a specific call-out for our organizations that we go to our Congressional Black Caucus and ask them, demand that they provide for your firms?
Well, I know back in February, the director of EPA, Michael Rainey, came out, did a tour. He seen exactly what we're doing, and he said, we think you should be a model for America. But how will I become a model if I'm not financially supported to even survive in Houston, Texas? I'll never make it to another state if we don't get some of this solar for our money. But, as I said, she came out, but how do we connect that diversity and make sure we are included when it's not fair? I just don't understand how it's going to work out. And I'm afraid of failing because it's just not fair.
Well, I understand that it's not fair, Mr. Jernigan. I understand that there has been misinformation put out by the Biden administration saying that this is a level playing field. It is not a level playing field. And we have to be honest about this. When you're talking about the University of Tech, when you're talking about major white colleges and universities going after the same grant opportunities and organizations, nonprofit organizations that have war chests and corporate support behind them where they can put out 11, 12 different grant applications in going after this federal money through a network of collaborations that they have long established. They know, based on the data that Dr. Denise Fairchild's organization has put out called The Playbook, where she lays out the fact that there has not been an established working relationships with our companies and with these unions. And in many of the southern states, the state legislatures have outlawed unions. So when you get to talking about union-scale payment, that it is not, it's just not there. Mr. Jernigan, we've come to the end of another show. So I would like for you to close with your comments for today, and I want to thank you for coming on the air this morning.
Okay, well, I want to thank you for the opportunity. And for all those who are listening, we have a problem. And the only way we're going to fix it is if we support one another, go on to the website, as Mr. Shirley said, let's educate ourselves, let's come together, and be that strength of will that needs the grace. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Jernigan. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes another exciting edition of Solar Now Future with its economic impact on Black America. I hope we brought you news that you can use. But please go to our website at positivechangepicc.com. Click on our news and events link. Also, go to our GoFundMe link. And don't be afraid to support what we're doing here through the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, because it has been the backbone to get the National Association up and running, to get us legal, to get us incorporated, and it takes resources, ladies and gentlemen, to do that. And with that being said, we don't want you to meet us back here next week. You want us to be just back here as we conclude another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And until next week, we say go in peace.
Life is a song worth singing. I can tell. Sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do. Singing.